You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We're going to talk about the Cardinals all night long.
And welcome into our third divisional preview here on Meet Me at Musial. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptie at C70. We've looked at the Brewers, we've looked at the Cubs, and tonight we're going to turn our attention to that team in Cincinnati, the Reds. We're talking with Doug Gray. You'll find him online at DougDirt24 on the Twitter. But Doug, before we get too far into all the Reds talk, tell them where we can find you and how long you've been doing this.
Well, I cover the big league club at redlegnation.com, but I've been covering the farm system since 2006, so Basically I'm ready to be buried in a box in the ground. I'm old and, yeah, but no, I've been doing this for quite a while.
Yeah, you one of the few that are older than me on that, because I've started mine in 2007. So it's always nice to all the people online like to poke at how old I am. So it's always nice to talk to a contemporary, as it were.
Can we change it from old to experienced? We're just very experienced.
Yeah, we're veterans. I think that's the way we should put it in baseball terminology, right?
Yes.
We are veterans. We have that leadership capability.
You might have that. I don't have that. I've just been around for a while.
we'll pretend at least. But that is actually, and I want to get to that later, but let's take this in order. The Reds had a fairly good 2023, maybe a little bit surprisingly good, and kind of set the stage for 2024. This winter, what did you think of the moves that they did make, and did they do everything they should have?
Well, I'll start off with the second part of that. I don't think they did all that they should have. I like the young core of the team, and I think that they went out and they got solid depth in the pitching staff. That was pretty important, because last year they were handing out starts to guys who were pitching in independent league baseball when the season started. That was not good. That's not what you want. I think that was one of their main focuses, to try and avoid that this season. With such a young pitching staff, they were probably already looking for ways to find innings late in the season, but then they just had injuries pile up towards the end of the year. And I mean, they even lost Nicodolo, I think, after the second start in May for the rest of the year. So they got real thin real quick, and they didn't really have anything to really turn to towards the end of the season, which is unfortunate for them, because, they came out and surprised people, starting in June when they finally started calling up some of their young guys and started taking things a little bit more seriously. But I would have preferred to see them, one, add more. I mean, their payroll going into this season is still about $60 million less than it was a decade ago.
Wow.
And as anybody who's been following the sport that long, there's a lot more money going around baseball right now. Now, I understand that there are some concerns and questions about exactly how this regional sports network issue is going to play out with a lot of the Bally Sports networks. Mm-hmm. But it's not like that money's just going to completely not exist. Like, right, somebody's going to pick up the games. They're still going to be bringing in tens of millions of dollars from that. And to just go from, $145 million payroll a decade ago to 85 to 90, depending on how you want to account for things this year. I mean, when almost all of your young players are making nothing for the next 3 years because they're pre-arb, this is exactly the time you should go out and spend some real money, because you don't have to worry about, the long-term contract keeping you from signing Matt McClain or, Ellie De La Cruz or Christian Encarnacion Strand, because, they're not going to be making real money for 4, 5, 6 years, and they're only going to make real money then if they turn into perennial all-stars, which, if that happens, hey, you're probably going to sell a lot more tickets, you're going to make a lot more money, and money's not going to be much of an issue. So I didn't really like the fact that, at least from where I'm sitting, they cheaped out. And that's not to say that I don't like the move they made. I think they should have just made more and maybe shot for a little bit bigger targets. I mean, they brought in Frankie Montas, which that's fine, but he also threw one more game in the major leagues last year than I did. Like, you have real, or you should have real amounts of money to go out and spend on starting pitching if you're going to add starting pitching. And I don't know. I felt that they should have done more. With that said, I think this division kind of sucks. Yeah. And it could be anybody's division. So, I mean, I still think that they're a contender for the division. But I think that the odds would be a lot better if they would have gone out and spent $30 million more than what they did and, you know, added a real legitimate piece. Whether it was somebody to add to the offense like they did with Jamer Candelario, or they added another starting pitcher.
You know, and we still hear, I mean, there's still people out there, right? And we've heard, of course, Cardinal fans have been talking about Jordan Montgomery because of the history that they have with him. You know, he recently said he wanted to play in, it sounded like he wanted to play in a smaller market, which, you know, obviously we'd prefer St. Louis, but it does sound like that would be a thing that if the Reds were serious, that would be a fit for them pretty well too.
I mean, I think so, but I also don't think that the Reds are looking to spend any more money. As unfortunate as that is, as a Reds fan who is turning 40 in, well, I don't know, less than a month, and the last time the Reds advanced in the playoffs, I was in fourth grade.
Okay. We just lost the contemporary part. You started writing earlier than I did. Because I'm closer to 50 than 40. but, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I know that there has been some significant, I don't know, rebellion, a surge against the ownership of the Castellanis over the last few years, and they've not done anything to suppress that, maybe encourage that at times with some of their comments. Is that still at a fever pitch, or did having a better season bring the temperature down a little bit?
I think it's a little bit of both. And I think that it mostly comes down to anybody who's 30-ish years old and younger, they're willing to let things slide. They haven't been through the same kind of things that the rest of us have been through. And so they're willing to, quote-unquote, wait it out and see what happens. And it's not that the older fans don't like the team. I feel that they're just more kind of on the page of, we want to see them do more and add to this team when they can, rather than just kind of hope that things work out. Because we've seen them sit around and hope that the prospects work out four different times in the last two decades. And I mean, it sort of kind of worked out in that 2009, 2010 to 2013 range. Mm-hmm. But that was a short-lived thing, and they didn't advance in the playoffs because, well, they just didn't really fully commit in a lot of our opinions. And so we're kind of sitting here thinking, is this going to happen again?
Yeah. So you've got a lot of young talent. I mean, the Reds may have the most young talent, especially that's already in the major leagues in this whole division by far. But one of the buzzwords, one of the themes that has been hit over and over in Cardinal camp is leadership. You know, they brought in Lance Lynn, they brought in Matt Carpenter, they brought in all the old veterans to lead this team. Is there a concern that that is something that the Reds need, or are they just willing to see how these guys develop?
I think there was a little bit of concern with that, especially with Joey Votto not being brought back this year. You know, Jonathan India is, I mean, among the returning players, I think Jonathan India has the most experience on the club. And I mean, he was the 2021 Rookie of the Year. Right, so right. That was just yesterday, pretty much. You know, they brought in Frankie Montas. They brought in Nick Martinez, Emilio Pagan. You know, Jamer Candelario is far and away the most experienced position player on the club right now. So I do think that they wanted to add a little bit of veteran depth to the roster for the purpose of leadership, because, you know, I think that anybody who has played sports at a higher level understands that you do want to have those older guys, especially when you've got a very young group out there, to, you know, provide that player point of view that maybe you can relate to a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Even if your coaches played professional sports, having somebody who is out there with you every day that can go, hey, look for this. This is what I went through, you know, a couple years ago, and here's how I came out of it. You know, those coaches can have that experience, but it's a little bit different when it's a player that is right next to you doing it. And I do think that that is something that they targeted.
Yeah, I had a discussion back in January with Katie Wu, who's the Cardinal beat writer for The Athletic. And we talked about that point because that's been a thing of how much does this leadership vacuum that the Cardinals probably had tie to the manager. And you know, that was her point, is the manager doesn't do, that's not his job to some degree. I mean, yeah, he can have an influence, but the players around are going to make much more of an impact on other players than, you know, your boss is, pretty much, right? I mean, that's just the kind of way it is in a lot of situations. So having those kind of guys on your team is a valuable thing.
Yeah, and I mean, hopefully, for at least for the Reds' sake, mm-hmm. I'm sure that some of the people listening aren't going to be hoping the same thing that I am, that, you know, that those guys they brought in can help, you know, some of these younger guys take that next step or improve on their flaws, their weaknesses.
You mentioned Votto, who's now with the Blue Jays. How tough is that? I mean, to see him not come back, and especially after sitting out there for so long. I know there's not necessarily the best spot for him with all these young players, and especially in the infield, but it still had to be tough to see him go.
So I've got conflicting points of view on this. I don't like it in the sense that, you know, he's been in the Reds organization since 2002. Mm-hmm. That's the year I graduated high school. Like, that's a long time. And so it's very weird, but I'm also very happy that he's getting the opportunity. You know, he got ejected in his last game as a Cincinnati Red. You know, he struck out and he got ejected after the first at bat of the final game of the season. And he didn't play the three or four games before that. I can't remember, but he only had like one plate appearance over the final like 4 or 5 days of the season. I really don't want to see him go out like that.
Yeah.
And so I'm very happy in the sense that he's at least going to get the opportunity to go out on his own terms. If he doesn't perform in Toronto and probably in Syracuse to start the season, then that's on him. And at least he gave it a shot. He got the opportunity versus, you know, what happened at the end of last season where technically, yeah, he probably said some things to the umpire he shouldn't have said, but he also, you know, you don't want to see a likely future Hall of Famer go out that way.
Yeah, I mean, especially the last game of the year on a game that nobody, it has no impact to anybody else, right? I mean, you've got to read the situation and give some guy a little bit of leeway. Yeah, that was pretty bad. I mean, you know, granted, umpires do these kind of things and we keep talking about them. it's pretty remarkable. So 2024, here we are halfway, probably more than halfway through camp. What do you have you seen in the spring that has surprised you, and what have you seen in the spring that maybe worries you?
I'm not sure anything has really surprised me so much as, you know, nothing has disappointed me from any of the young players. They all look, as I expected, similar to where they were last year, with the exception that Ellie De La Cruz is walking a little bit more, but it's spring training. Does that really matter all that much? I mean, yes, it's better than not walking more, given that was one of the weaknesses that he showed last year. But, you know, I don't put much into spring training stats. I'm more, you know, what do they look like? Mm-hmm. And I just, from watching them, nothing really stands out there. You know, Frankie Montas has struggled in the spring so far. And normally that wouldn't concern me because, again, it's spring training. I don't really care about that. But given that he's coming off of a shoulder injury that pretty much cost him the whole season, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't the tiniest bit concerned about that. But he says he's healthy, and if he says he's healthy and he feels fine, then I'm not too concerned about it. He's been around long enough to know what he needs to get done to get ready for the season.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you're right. Coming off of injury, you want to see them. And coming to a new team, right? You want to see them, even if it doesn't matter, you want to see them put a strong first foot forward, I guess. And to have it struggled has a tendency to you know, start to shade your opinions just a little bit. And, you know, again, if it carries through, we've seen in St. Louis and other places, you know, a free agent that comes in and struggles in April sometimes doesn't ever get the goodwill of the fan base back, because that's the first impression.
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, it's he's been around long enough. He knew going in that he wasn't, quote unquote, pitching for a job, mm-hmm. which that the whole concept of playing for 4 weeks in spring training against who knows what level of competition wins or loses somebody a job is absolutely insane, given that we've got years of information on all of these players that are legitimately in conversation for making the team. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's probably another story for a different day, but it drives me insane. So, you know, guys like that, they're going out there and they're working on specific things that day. You know, if they realize right away that, hey, you know, I've been struggling locating my curveball, for example, this spring. Well, maybe they go out and they throw 12 curveballs in an inning because that's what they need to work on. The hitters out there, they don't care that you've got to work on your curveball. They're trying to crush that thing. And if they know it's coming, they're going to do that.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely true. Now, that being said, here we are. You know, 2 weeks from tonight, today is opening day. Do you start putting a little bit more weight on what happens from this point forward, just because it is getting a little bit more of the serious nature to things?
I don't, especially for guys that have been around a lot, which there aren't that many egos. There aren't that many of those guys on the Reds that have been around for a long time, but. For the most part, these guys are just out there. They're getting their work in. They're trying to get ready for the season. I'm worried about what happens on opening day. Until then, all that matters is staying healthy.
Well, speaking of opening day, then, when you're looking at this season, who are you most excited to see? And who do you think will, and maybe it's the same person, who do you think will take the biggest step up from what they've been in the past?
So I think it could be the same person in Elly De La Cruz. I think he might be one of the three or four most exciting players in the game. Not the best player, but the most exciting player because of all the things that he can do and how he can do them. You know, like I mentioned, I don't know, a couple minutes ago, he didn't walk much last year and he struck out a lot. I think he's always going to strike out a lot. He's 6'5" or 6'6". He's got long arms. It's very difficult, especially in today's game when everybody throws 97 or more, to not strike out a lot with a huge strike zone like that. But I think that he's going to walk more. You know, last year in AAA, he started the year on the injured list. When he came back, he had one walk and 19 strikeouts in the first week. Mm. And then for the next 6 weeks, he walked as often as he struck out and got called up to the big leagues. I think that he gets the strike zone a little bit better than the numbers would suggest at the major league level. I do think that he's going to take a step forward there this year. And if he takes a big step there, then, you know, the moon, you know, that guy he could just do anything, everything. But I think that Matt McClain could also be the most valuable player on this team. Mm-hmm. He's good at everything and he's really good at some things. He's not going to be as flashy as De La Cruz. He's not going to have the power of Christian Encarnacion Strand, but I mean, if he hits 20 home runs, steals 30 bases, plays good defense at second base, gets on base, hits for a solid average again. I mean, he put up 4 wins last year in 110 games. He's a very good player if he can repeat that but stay healthy all year.
Which is going to be the major challenge, I guess, for a lot of these guys, right? And you've already talked about Nadolo, who's, I think, still hurt, and Hunter Green has had some of those issues in the past as well. I mean, I guess there's really nothing you can do except hold your breath, right, when these guys are out there.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, it's about, with the pitchers, I mean, everybody is just one pitch away. As unfortunate as that is, I mean, that's just the times that we're living in. And I mean, it hasn't always quite been that way. I think there is some survivorship bias going on for how we remember pitchers from the past.
Yeah.
But I think we all know it's true that guys are getting hurt more often these days, and there's probably a variety of reasons for it. But, yeah, I mean, and I think that goes back to why the Reds built up, or at least attempted to build up, so much depth in the offseason in their pitching staff, is because they did see what happened last year because guys kept getting hurt. Now, fortunately for Hunter Green, it was not an arm injury. Yeah. For Nick Lodolo, it's not an arm injury. But Nick Lodolo also seemed to have 2 different stress reactions or fractures in his leg, and they were still bothering him a couple weeks ago. he went and saw a specialist, and apparently he's full on ready to go now. So he's still building up, and he may miss the first week of the season. But yeah, it's just stay healthy.
Yeah.
It just seems that the last couple of years in Major League Baseball, when the playoffs start and get going, it's whoever's the healthiest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're going to have injuries, have them now so that hopefully they'll be ready by October.
And hopefully they're not long enough to keep you from playing in October,
exactly,
too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Those little nagging things are, you know, like Sonny Gray had a hamstring or whatever. Get those out of the way now.
Yeah. And if it's going to be something, be a hamstring.
Yeah. Right.
Don't be an arm thing. Be a hamstring that hopefully you can be back in 2 or 3 weeks.
So when you look at the division, and every person we've talked to so far, is, you know, when they look at the division, their team is on top. And I think, as you said, this division is weak. So it's very fair to say that. How do you think it shakes out this year?
Well, with the news for the Brewers with Devin Williams, that I think that's going to push them down a little bit from where it would have been if you had asked me a week ago. But I mean, I really do think that it's a very tight race outside of the Pirates. Yeah. I mean, call me crazy. I don't have faith that the Pirates can hang with the other four teams. But I mean, I just look at everybody and I just feel that everybody's got something that could go right that could put them in that 88 win range. But I mean, if you were to force me to bet actual real American dollars on it, I don't think I'd pick any team in the division to win 85. I think that they're all relatively mediocre. I think that the Reds have a high upside because of all their young players, but that also means that they're relying on a lot of realistically unproven guys. You know, the book is out on a lot of these guys now. How does the league adjust? We don't really know how that's going to play out until it actually plays out. And I think that with the Reds specifically, it makes the error bars on their wins and losses a lot higher than everybody else, which can be good or bad. You know, if it works out well, would it really shock anybody if they won the division by 5 or 6 games? No. But if they won 77 games, would it shock anybody? No, probably not either.
No, I was thinking, you know, today as we're kind of thinking about talking tonight, but that the Reds have probably the highest ceiling, but perhaps the lowest floor out of the four. You're right. Pittsburgh, I think, is going to be better. Pittsburgh may be a little bit more in the mix than we would normally do, but you're still not necessarily expecting them to make an impact. That, you know, that being said, if they had an owner that wanted to win and they went out and bought up Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery, they might be right in this mix really quickly.
But we've seen what the Pirates owner does. So.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. not at all.
Sorry, any Pirates fans listening.
Yeah.
I want to say I feel your pain, but even the Reds owners don't seem that bad. But hey, you know, you've got the Penguins and the Steelers, so I can't feel that bad for you.
So if the Reds do win this division, especially if they win 90 games or so, what has gone right, do you think? How do they do it?
Okay. Well, I think that two things would have to happen there. Ellie De La Cruz turned into an all-star, which, again, I don't think that would be crazy if it happened. I understand why there'd be some skepticism going into the season for that, sure. And I think that Hunter Green, who, you know, he's worked on adding a curveball this offseason, and he's added a split-finger fastball this offseason. I'm assuming he's going to scrap the changeup for that. He's only pitched in one game so far this spring where they've had pitch tracking. He didn't throw any changeups, but he threw a bunch of splitters. So I'm going to make the assumption that he's dropped the changeup for the splitter. You know, if those pitches work and he goes on a run like we think that he could, then sure, I think the Reds could be, you know, a high 80s win team. I think that's what would have to happen. That Hunter Green breaks out and those two new pitches kind of let him take that next step, and that Ellie De La Cruz turns into an all-star caliber player.
To maybe somewhat bring this full circle, if the Reds are in contention at the end of July, will ownership add to this team? And what kind of assets do they have to make a trade?
So I think that they've got the assets to make a trade. One of the things that kind of frustrated me the offseason is that they didn't make a trade. Mm-hmm. One, because they had the money, but two, they had the prospects. Most, I think seven of their top 11 prospects, according to my rankings, are infielders. The Reds already have more infielders in the major leagues than they have spots to play them. And that doesn't include Spencer Steer, who they moved to the outfield because they didn't have enough spots to play anybody. So for the next 5 to 6 years, they have nowhere to play any or seven of their top 11 prospects unless they trade two guys away that are currently in their starting lineup plus DH. And they didn't trade anybody. It doesn't make any sense. So I think that from a prospect trade perspective, you know, they've got plenty of, you know, players that they can move in deals to acquire what I believe would be a legitimate add at the trade deadline. Now, whether they're going to spend the money or not, who knows? Because Nick Kroll, who is now the president of baseball operations for the organization, said last year in the middle of July that they had the approval to make a trade. And they were in first place at the trade deadline last year, and they didn't do anything. So if they're quote-unquote in contention, who knows? Because last year, they were really in contention. They were in first place, and they had, I don't know, two of their five starting pitchers that they wished they would have had healthy at the point in mm-hmm. time, and they didn't make a move. So, I don't know. I'm in wait and see and hope and pray mode for that. But I'd be lying if I said I've got a ton of faith in them making a legitimate move. But I don't know. I've been surprised before, but I'm not counting on it just based on their history.
Yeah, it's kind of that, you know, you assume not until they surprise you. And who knows? They very well may. And again, like we say, this division feels like it's up for grabs for anybody. And even if you're a couple games out, or it's hard to imagine anybody, unless something just really bad happens, or really good, I guess, for somebody, any of these four teams being, what, 8 games, 9 games out of first, even as late as July, right? It just feels like they're going to be bunched up all the way down.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, unless something unexpected happens, a bunch of injuries to a couple of teams, or some team just goes on some sort of crazy run and just runs away with the division. I'm with you. I think that it's going to be pretty tightly packed, and it'll be interesting to see what teams decide that they can make the moves and which teams decide that, hey, maybe we're going to roll with our guys. I mean, I've got my suspicions as to what each of the teams would do, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, As I always say, that's why they play the games. We will find out starting 2 weeks from today. But Doug, it's been a lot of fun talking to you about this team, and look forward to seeing how it goes this year.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. And I don't know. Hopefully the two of us can have a nice little fun rivalry going at the All-Star break and see what happens at that trade deadline.
This series has been void of bad blood probably until the end of the night last night. And there's Dusty Baker and Tony La Russa. They've had their issues with one another over the years.
I'm really stunned that a war of words would actually cause the benches to empty before they get going in the bottom of the first inning. Obviously, some discourse between Yadier Molina and Brandon Phillips sparked the whole thing. We won't know until after a game exactly what was said. Now Scott Rowland is getting into it.
And now it is turning ugly.
In it with Chris Carpenter. And Carpenter's the one down there chirping.
Carpenter had issues with his own teammates last night, and it is getting really ugly as we've got punches and kicks. Johnny Cueto, the starting pitcher, is being wrestled away.
And this is not good at all, because this is the kind of situation where somebody can get up, get hurt, get their finger stepped on, and it's just not baseball.